About Dr. King at the interfaith gathering at the United University Church at USC yesterday, Sunday, January the 20th, 2013. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. This week, we will be celebrating Dr. King's Day with my in-studio guest, Dr. Ruby Walton Omar, Andrea Ross, Lee Shaw, and Bill Henry. Before we get into our discussion about Dr. King, I would like to play a short interview I did with my brother, Reverend Freddie Johnson of Memphis, Tennessee, about Dr. King. I conducted the interview in my hometown of Greenville, Mississippi, Christmas Day, 2012. The interview is 7 minutes long. Okay. Welcome to the Qumran Report. I'm down south in my hometown of Greenville, Mississippi, and I'm speaking with my brother, Reverend Freddie Johnson. He lives in Memphis, Tennessee. Reverend Johnson, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, can you tell us a little about your military service, what branch, years of service, and your MOS?
Okay, military service, did 5 years, United States Air Force, 1964 to 69. MOS was Air Police. Mm-hmm. And
now, what was the racial situation like in the military during that time?
Well, like I said, it was in the 60s, and the racial situation in the military, well, it was kind of kept solid in the organization I was in. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I was one of the only blacks in my squadron, which was Air Police. Most of them was of the white race. Man, we got along pretty good, you know. And for his races, never really dealt with it because, like I said, I was a policeman, and it was my job to, you know, something goes wrong for me to intercept it. So mainly that's what I was focused on.
Okay. Now, what are your thoughts on Dr. King? This is Dr. King's national holiday on the Monday, January the 21st, 2013. What are your thoughts on Dr. King? Well, especially since Dr. King was a minister also.
Mm-hmm. Dr. King was really one of my role models. And his work should be and never should be and couldn't be forgotten for what he did for the black race, you know, during those days. As our main spokesman, you know, there was pros and there was cons. Mm-hmm. Like one of the cons, Malcolm X, you know, which also I don't believe has gotten his, you know, recognition also. Because him and Dr. King go hand in hand to me.
Okay.
And Dr. King should never be forgotten.
Okay.
And like you say, I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. And there's a place there called Graceland.
Where Elvis Presley is.
Of course. Where they honor Elvis Presley, which is nothing wrong with it. You know, that's what they want to do. But my speaking personally, I don't see too much what Elvis Presley done for his race or either our race. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting Elvis Presley down or anything like that. But just looking at what is going on there right now, mm-hmm. Elvis Boulevard runs miles and miles long. Dr. King, as of this year to be exact, just got a little strip of street mm-hmm. named Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard. Mm-hmm. You know, both of them died in Memphis.
In Memphis.
Yeah. One died, what they like to say, natural causes. Mm-hmm. But you know how he died, Elvis yeah. Presley.
Yeah.
And you know how Dr. King died.
Mm-hmm. One assassinated, one OD'd on drugs.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't mm-hmm. want to say it, but like I say, not trying to put nobody down, but I always ask myself this question. Who did the most for the people, regardless of race, color, or creed? And now, so I always get a Dr. Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm. Mine's too, no doubt in my mm-hmm. mind.
But in Memphis, they call Elvis Presley the King. Mm-hmm. You know, which is cool with me because it really don't matter to me.
Yeah.
Because I know what Dr. Martin Luther King did and through his speeches, through mm-hmm. his marches, mm-hmm. things of that nature. He did a lot for the, mm-hmm. not only the black race, but for both races.
As a whole. Especially mm-hmm. now, pushing the concept of nonviolence with all of this violence mm-hmm. that's going on in the world.
Right.
You know, they trying to look like they're trying to try everything but what he laid down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you this. Dr. King said that the three greatest evils mm-hmm. for America was racism, poverty, and militarism. Can you touch a little on each one of them, what he was talking about, or whether or not mm-hmm. That have come to be mm-hmm. since he was assassinated?
Yeah. My heart is saying, speak on this one first,
mm-hmm.
poverty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, simply because, like, today is Christmas Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you watch the TV, and you see so many episodes on Feed the Hungry. Feed the homeless and all that. Now, if they did it right, we wouldn't have to go through all that. Mm-hmm. If they share alike, you know, with like the rich man got this much over him, man got that much over him, and the poor man got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He's just out there homeless on his own. Mm-hmm. And that lead to the military. A lot of those are veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
That's right. Yeah.
They got it set up so the veterans can get help. But a lot of veterans don't even know what the first step to take.
Yeah.
Now take me, for example. I've been trying to get service connected ever since 1986. And it just happened 2012.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
To be out there straight from Vietnam and just dumped back in the world, mm-hmm. no help or nothing like that. Thank God every day.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the...
For still being there, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's the regular status of what they're doing to most of the veterans all over the United mm-hmm. States in terms of being homeless and... Mm-hmm. And the time element in terms of getting help. And mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, how about, yeah, you touched on militarism, poverty. Then how about the other one, the other three that he talked about, racism?
Racism.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because mm-hmm. when we come up in Greenville, Mississippi, mm-hmm. which was almost totally...
Okay. Thank you. That's Reverend Freddie Johnson in Memphis, Tennessee, my brother. Now, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio Dr. Ruby Walton Omar, who is a member of the interfaith group ICUJP. And ICUJP was founded in Los Angeles after 9/11 to support the work of faith leaders from Buddhist, Christian, Islamic, Jewish, and other spiritual faith traditions who say religious communities must stop blessing war and violence. ICUJP meet every Friday morning at 7 o'clock a.m. at Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, located at 3300 Wilshire Boulevard, Also, a little bit more about Dr. Ruby. Dr. Ruby Walton Omar received her PhD in ordained ministers through the International Metaphysical Ministry. She is a licensed practitioner, emeritus, through the Church of Religious Science, now known as the Center for Spiritual Living. Furthermore, she's a practitioner and director of Freedom Light, the Prison and Beyond Ministry at Agape International Spiritual Center. She has a bachelor's degree in communication from Loyola Marymount University. She is a certified youth volunteer with the L.A. County Sheriff and with the Malta Faith Executive Clergy Council, and was recently CERT CERT, which stands for Community Emergency Response Team Training. Dr. Ruby, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, and I'd like to say peace in to everyone.
Peace in. Now, can you tell us a little about yourself and about your ministry?
Well, one thing is that I started greeting people peace in because we were the only people saying hello. Mm-hmm. And I found in the other languages was Buenos Dias, Guten Tag, Assalamu Alaikum, and even the Britishers. But we were saying hell, oh. So our focus is not on greeting someone for their worst, but supporting them in the better. And so in finding out in the ministry that I started working with, the prison ministry, it's supporting them in letting them know that they can release whatever they were for and make the choice and the responsibility of change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds great. Now tell us a little about yourself, your background, a little bit more about your ministry.
You've got it there.
Yeah. Okay.
You've got it pretty mm-hmm, much, mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
But one of the things I'd like to say, and I'll jump in regarding Dr. Martin Luther King,
mm-hmm.
I was very fortunate. Where I was raised in Denver, Colorado, I knew nothing of prejudice. I would go with my friend Rebecca to the Jewish synagogue. I'd go with my other friends. I had a red-haired white Ruth Ann Kennedy. I'll never forget her. And she was Caucasian Catholic. And we were Methodists. And so I enjoyed everybody. I knew nothing about being black or Native American. All I knew was that I was a little girl and I was a human being in love.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Frankfurt, Germany, where I went to high school. So I went with different people. And I found some pictures of me lately where I was praying at the wall. They had a wall. They were going to build the wall in Berlin, and it bridged over. And I was praying with the guard then. So then I started praying.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I heard about Martin Luther King, it shocked me about people being treated like this. And so my heart has been with King for what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone coming together in unity and knowing that this person, this eon, will just always be remembered. We'll always speak his thoughts, his communication. We will always, this is all colors, black, mm-hmm. white, green, pink. This is Asian, everyone. When you say Martin Luther King, everybody says, oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about a four-letter word called love.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember where you were, what you were doing when you heard about Dr. King was assassinated?
Yes, at that time I had four children. I think they were 7, 5, 4, and 3. And we were preparing for my oldest son's birthday that day. And I was changing diapers or doing some kid things at home. And the TV was on. And I heard it, so I do remember.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Dr. Ruby. What are your thoughts on Dr. King's concept of nonviolence?
Well, peace attracts peace. Love attracts love. all of these things. And this is what he brought in. When Dr. King said he wanted this to be a better world for his four children, and that they would live in a nation where they would not be judged by color of their skin or the content of their character. And we see now we have a president. Yes, in the beginning he was judged, but now he was, we celebrated today. And this is a part of Dr. King's dream.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Now, Dr. King talked about three evils that he thought the world faced for the future: poverty, racism, and militarism. Let's start with poverty. Can you comment on that? What are your thoughts on it?
Poverty can subsist or be a perception and learn behavior. Mm-hmm. They don't know anyway. They haven't been taught. I was in South Africa year before last, and the people that had sold their properties moved back into these little bitty places and rented them out because they weren't comfortable. They were comfortable living in poverty. So it takes discipline. It takes a willingness to accept responsibility. It takes the right mentors. It takes strength, energy, perseverance, and for them to know that they're worthy of change.
Mm-hmm. How about the racism? You talked a little about it early. Do you think how would you compare the racial situation, like when you were talking about coming up in Denver, as opposed to now, the present day?
Some people hang in the racism. This is where they want to be. Mm-hmm. But to be able to learn from each other. When you see the Hispanics and they're hanging together and they forgive. I mean, Uncle so-and-so went to jail, but he come home and everybody gets together as a family. Mm-hmm. And they may not have a lot of money, but they're working together as a family. Asians, mm-hmm. the way they're eating and teaching us how to eat. So everybody has a way. We all, if not, we'd all been the same color.
Mm-hmm.
We'd all have the same fingerprints. It's the same. We'd just be the same.
Mm-hmm.
But when you believe in that there is a power greater than anything, that everything is from, then you know that that divine energy that we call God
mm-hmm.
loved and still loves and still creating.
Okay. Now, tell us a little about your prison ministry, the plan that you got for the prison ministry.
Well, I set it up in 12 teams. Because I said Jesus had 12 disciples or 12, and the teams are different ones. One is like resources. Another one is health. Another one is finances. Another one is, I can't remember all of them, spirituality. But then having team leaders to lead each team, people who have wisdom and knowledge and of the work that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So in health, I have three people. I have one person who is, she has a club, but she also is in health and is in natural health. I have another person that just got, she's certified regarding drugs and alcohol. See, so they'll work together
mm-hmm.
and see what they need. The letters I'm getting now, I have a young lady in North Carolina. And I just got a letter from her. She said, I'm pregnant, but I don't want my baby to be like my family. Mm-hmm. So do you have somebody that can adopt my child? I have another gentleman who wrote me and he said, I've got all these, in prison that he has done so many different things. He's got all these certificates. When he comes out, he's ready to work.
Okay.
So it's just working with them in their own individuality to know that whatever thoughts that they are.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say they are, I'm talking about they are human beings. They're not ex-cons.
Okay.
And so for giving them a will.
Let me ask you this. What do you think is, what do you identify as a major need for individuals coming up out of prison?
Their major need is support. Mm-hmm. And the support is for their own understanding of their self. that their capability to make change, they have a will to make change, that they won't fall back into this. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much recidivism is because they get out, and some have been in so long that they have, I'll tell you a joke. This one person I have, she said her uncle came out of prison. And she said, well, would you go in the refrigerator? And she said, I need some ice. Would you go in the refrigerator? And so he kept looking around and looking around. And she said, well, what are you looking for? And he said, well, where's your ice pick? Because he'd been in that long. Mm-hmm. So we have to work with them however long they've been in, whether their families are receiving them or not, giving them a reason to know that there is a reason for them just to be.
Okay, beautiful. Okay, let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we're coming back and open it up to our round tape.
This is the community calendar for the month of January and February. The next Veterans Community Workshop is being held Tuesday, January the 29th, 2013, from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. And this workshop is free to veterans and non-veterans. The location is the Vortex, 2341 West Olympic Boulevard in Los Angeles. This is near the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic. Also, the Metro bus number 60 and 66 stops right near to the corner. And if you're interested or for more information on the workshop, contact 213-908-6587. Friday, February the 1st, 2013 at 9 p.m. as part of the High Voltage Theater Series, Drama Stage Qumran will be performing the stage play Nailheads at the Electric Lodge, location 1416 Electric Avenue, and this is in Venice, California. And for more information on the performance, you can call 213-908-6587. Upcoming guests on the Qumran Report, Monday, January the 28th, 2013, will have a group of rappers, and they're coming with some of their friends. This is just a reminder, if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. Also, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Hey, thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. Now we're back with our in-studio guests, Dr. Ruby Walton Omar, and joining us for our roundtable discussion will be Andrea Ross, Lee Shaw, my co-host Earlene Anthony, and Mr. Bill Hendry. Now, I would like to start off our roundtable with a question that I asked Dr. Ruby, and that is, what do Dr. King mean to you, and what are your thoughts on his concept of nonviolence? Let's start off with Andrea.
Good evening. Ken and I'd like to give our homage to Dr. King on his very special holiday. And for all those that went before him and all those with those sentiments of nonviolence, today we need to incorporate or reincorporate the nonviolent attitudes of the civil rights movement. It seems to me that in this society as it stands now, they propagate violence as opposed to nonviolence. You look on the video games and the TVs and the programs. Everything is geared towards violence. So how is it that the concept of nonviolence has just fallen out of the radar, out of context? We need to reincorporate that into everyday living. And I do believe that the world as a whole will be a much better place to live in if we would adopt the ideologies of nonviolence. It lends itself to the practice of love.
Okay. Now, what did Dr. King mean to you?
Dr. King, he's just a great person. There's no color content or any kind of his ideas are just, they cross all color lines and all boundaries.
Yeah.
We need to incorporate his thoughts and his patterns to unify the world, you know, because it's humankind. It's not just mankind, but humankind, everyone, every color.
Yeah.
Black, white, red, green, yellow, brown. He embraced them all. And in the coming together of the people across the nations and the worlds, Dr. King stands head and shoulders above the rest. I liken him to Mahatma Gandhi and all the other great people of faith and love. The number one component of everything he preached was love.
Okay. Yeah, because when I think about Dr. King, especially when I look back now, and I always ask the question when I hear a speech or look at him, how could anyone dislike Dr. King?
It's impossible to think that J. Edgar Hoover deemed him the most feared man in America above Malcolm X and all the H. Rapp Brown, Huey P. Newton. Mr. Hoover felt that he was the greatest threat of all these people simply because he had a unifying process.
Yeah.
You know, that was the problem.
Yeah.
He had the ability to bring people together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's pick up on that, and then I'm going to move on to Lee, because 30 days before Dr. King was assassinated, J. Edgar Hoover sent around this memo that's known as the Hoover Memo.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole purpose of the memo was to prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify the black militant masses. He feared Dr. King had the ability to do the same thing that Marcus Garvey was able to do, and that's to unify not just a national movement, but an international movement. Let's move over to Lee. What you think about Dr. King? What are your thoughts on Dr. King? What do he mean to you? And what are your thoughts on his concept of nonviolence?
I mean, he had a good movement, and no doubt about that right there. Because he was able to accomplish a lot of different things. What do you mean to me?
Mm-hmm.
Diddly squat. You know why? Mm-hmm. Because if it meant anything to me, I would be doing what he did. I would have seen what he seen. And I would have took it a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not in a situation. I'm not there. Right? Because if he said, mine eyes have seen the glory. Right? He's giving you something to deal with. Right? It's beyond me. I may not get there with you. You know what I'm saying? But it's coming. All you got to do is follow it, right? Mm-hmm. A man or a child struggles in the womb for 9 months till there's no more room. He has to get free, right? Mm-hmm. So that means, and even when he gets free of that right there, he has another struggle coming. So the struggle continues always.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Always the struggle continues. It starts from the cradle to the grave.
Now, how about his concept of nonviolence?
Well, if you want to, I mean, and I've been accused of this right here. I'm always a fault finder. But I'm going to tell you, the best way to expose some people is be nonviolent. And that's what he did. See, you can say Malcolm X is nonviolent or violent by speech, but as long as I don't touch you, I broke no laws, right? If I tell you about yourself, I broke no laws. Martin Luther King proved that the most violent people were the ones who were opposed to justice. Equality. They were opposed to it, right? So who's evil? Mm-hmm. Who's violent?
Who's the violent one? Okay. Well, let's move on. We're going to come back. Earlene, what do Dr. King mean to you? And what are your thoughts on this concept of nonviolence?
Well, Dr. King, first and foremost, was a man, I believe, called of God. Because otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to do the things that he did. He tapped into the spirit of people, and this crossed all color lines. It wasn't about Dr. King was for the black man only, because many of his rallies that you can see different races of people, and I believe this is why it succeeded and went as far as it did, because it was a spiritual movement more than a natural movement.
Okay.
And many times you would hear him especially when he say, my eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He was a visionary, and he had tapped into the spirit realm, and this is what motivate people. You tap into their spirit, and this is where change come about.
Okay. Now, what are your thoughts on his concept of nonviolence?
As far as nonviolence, I'm a nonviolent person. It's hard for me to, you know, even think about, you know, what if someone attacked me and I had to fight back, you know. It's hard for me to, you know, really conceive of that. But I believe in Dr. King's, he was called to do a nonviolence. And if you're not called to do a certain thing, I say don't get out there trying to do it. Mm-hmm. But as we look back, you know, we can see the backstory on Dr. King and see his paper trail, where he came and where he went to be able to do the nonviolence. You have to have a calling for things like this.
Okay. Let's move on to our other guest, Mr. Bill Henry. What are your thoughts on what do Dr. King mean to you, and what are your thoughts on nonviolence?
I was a child when Dr. King was speaking, so, you know, I've got everything secondhand. Now, I believe Dr. King was basically here preaching what Jesus told to preach. So we were taught to turn the other cheek and not to kill one another. And Dr. King was the second coming to let you know that this is what Jesus said. This is what God wants. Why are we doing this? So stop. I mean, he was saying that you can gain a lot more just by talking to someone instead of stabbing them. Like when you're young, when we were young, you used to fight. You know, you get in a fight, that person could be your best friend. Now, you get in a fight, they shoot you, it's a done deal. You never know what kind of relationship you could have had. So I'm totally in agreement with turn the other cheek.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Also, let me ask this. Let me open up the table again. Is nonviolent a violent tactic in such a violent world that we live in? Anybody want to pick up on that?
Let's just say nobody going to start. I don't know, get with it.
Yeah.
You know, society breeds violence. It's taught in the society.
Yep.
Right? Good. All you have to do is add a little something. If America, I'm going to say it like over here, there's no way I can explain it. If America is to be a great nation, she must first understand inside, right? And then go outside. America goes outside and forgets about the inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Do a mother forget about what she's eating when she has her child? When she's pregnant with her child? I think not. Some do. You know what I'm saying? So America has got to maintain an integrity and not to put its citizens on a call for violence. Because if I don't have, right, and I got to feed my babies, check this out. Whatever's whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Okay. And this is the way people see it. I mean, you're pushing a thing that, you know, that don't make no... Actually, you know, let me tell you something. It don't make no sense. It don't make no sense for nobody in America to be homeless. It don't make no sense for nobody in America to be without a job. You know what? You want me to buy a Honda, a Toyota, and all the rest of them things right there? I'm buying something that says made in the USA, and it better be made here in the USA, not as a tag.
Okay.
That's right. You know what I'm saying?
Andrea. What are your thoughts on the fact, the concept of nonviolent? Is it a valid tactic in such a nonviolent time that we live in? What are your thoughts on?
It's very hard to incorporate a nonviolent attitude when every time you turn on the TV you see guns and weapons, and then you talk about weapons of mass destruction, and then you look out and you got a war over here and you got a war over there. How do you incorporate nonviolence into an attitude which is geared on war? The whole economy is geared on having war. I don't understand it. It's an oxymoron.
Okay.
At this point. You have to.
Okay. Could I say one thing?
Go ahead.
America... Poor people. The most patriotic people in America are poor. They are poor. The most patriotic people in America are poor. They are not rich. They're not, I always say, wealthy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? The wealthiest, you know what they do? They go all over the world just to make some money. Forget about everybody else. What do you mean? This is what I got to do? I ain't got to do none of this right here.
They send jobs.
They send jobs.
All the way across the world just to make some money.
Dr. Ruby.
Yes, I'd like to say something on nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
Violence can come within. So the first thing is taking, and I call it peace power, inner peace. And I call peace a patient energy attitude change exercise. And for us to be able to teach others this, rather than to react or act in violence, to stop, take a breath, and see what it is that you can change in your thoughts, your mind. There's a season for nonviolence. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's 64 days for nonviolence. It starts January 30th and goes to April 4th. And with this season of nonviolence, there's an affirmation each day that helps people practice nonviolence. Mm-hmm. But it takes change because so many kids are taught. They're taught in the beginning, like we were saying before, you know, 2, 3. And it's teaching the parents
mm-hmm.
how to act or react. So the parents, or they need lessons.
Let me ask this question, especially for the interfaith group here. When Jesus whipped the money changers out of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider that a violent act?
No.
Okay.
No. God is on the money.
He was removing something that the Almighty detests.
Okay. So you said no because of that. What do you say, Dr. Ruth?
I said God is on the money.
Okay, but was that a violent act?
You know, violence begets violence.
Yeah.
So we have to look and see if it was violence. What was the reason? What was the perception of it?
Okay.
And the perception is different for different people.
Okay. Andrea.
Well, I'm of a mind of if Jesus did it, he had to be right. There was something.
All right. Yeah.
If he did it, it had to be right. It was a purpose for him taking the money changers out because what they were doing was not lending itself to the cause.
You know,
but answer this question. we're not gonna dance around this question. here's what I want to know, because no doubt Jesus is right.
He had to be right.
But what I want to know, what's your thoughts, Bill? Was the act of whooping the money changers out of the temple, was that a violent act?
Now, would you want somebody coming into your house bringing a lot of junk, throwing stuff around and selling stuff behind your back in your house?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
So
it wasn't a violent act. It just said, look, you need to leave. This is it.
So he was restoring order.
So he was just restoring order into his house.
And the clearest way to say anything like that right there about Jesus, Jesus was a revolutionary.
Yes, he was.
Putting things back to what he's supposed to be.
He was ahead of his time.
Okay.
Let me ask this. Some people believe in spanking and I guess in the southern states they say I'm whipping my child.
No.
Now let me ask you, is that a violent act?
Well, they don't know any better.
Yeah.
This is what they.
But is this violent for the? Is it a violent act?
Yes.
You can consider it a violent act. But when we put it in the context of discipline, right? It's an order in the house. When you go against the order in the house, there's repercussions like it is here and there. You go out and steal something, you go to jail.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that didn't go with the slavery.
No, but TP, everybody ain't gonna agree with you because you know what? If you had to pay me for my ancestors, you'd be paying me. Let me say it right here. Everybody that was missing injustice in America got paid for it.
Right.
Except for the black people.
Except
for black people.
Right.
But you know why? Do you know why they don't get paid for it? Because you as much of America as the white man or anybody else is in America.
Because
you helped build this thing right here.
Exactly.
But you don't know what you got, unless you know what you got coming, you don't get nothing. You don't claim it.
What I want to do now, with all the discussion about the movie Django Unchained and Lincoln, you know, really dividing the people into different camps, I would like to play something by Dr. King, and then we will continue our round table. Let's listen to Dr. King.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Tennysonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with a pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure. Ah, but I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Okay, who want to pick up on some comments on that? Dr. Ruby?
Yeah, for me, black is just as pure as white because each one is a whole energy. And it's so funny because cats are hanging around my house and one is a black cat, but the other is a black rabbit. And they come together and they play together. And so it's just the attraction of each other. Mm-hmm. But it's in unity and love.
Okay. Andrea.
They're like opposite ends of the spectrum, but they're both synonymous. You know, you're white. Okay. It's all one color. You're black. It's all one color. But why do you make such a difference between black being a negative connotation and white being, like Dr. King said, something that's always pure and, you know, beautiful? Mm-hmm. And it's true if you just think about the words that hold the negative connotation. Black bald, blacklisted, blackhearted. Negative, negative, negative. Mm-hmm. We need to change that and flip it around or eliminate it.
Okay, but I want to get a little deeper because I want to tie this into what I was talking about early, all of the comments and stuff that's going about Django Unchained and Lincoln, et cetera, like that. Do you think that a white director in America should be free to make any movie, any statement that they want about any other American, whether they black, Hispanic? If I'm a white person, I mean, if I'm a black person, I want to write a history on Pancho Villa or something like that, you think I should be being an American? I'm pointing out this in relationship to the arguments for Quentin Tarantino and Django.
That's freedom of speech.
Yes. Go ahead.
I mean, that would violate, I think it just violates your constitutional rights when they take away your freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. And when you start doing it with, you know, say you take one person's right away, it trickles down to other people where it could be a lot more important than just somebody talking about a movie or just doing a movie about someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's a consciousness for what the world is accepting. Because there's a lot of black movies that are talking bad about white people. Mm-hmm. Or Caucasian. And then the same with the Hispanic or the same with the Asian. So it's a basic consciousness of what we're accepting as a planet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, as a planet, if we can just work with the unity and the love and the balance, mm-hmm. not just saying that black is bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it was, what was it, Huey Newton, or they brought Black is Beautiful? You know, or Peace Bow? And I call it...
James Brown.
Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud.
Yeah, James Brown. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking before Huey Newton and some other people, you know, but that didn't come out until James Brown did I'm Black and I'm Proud.
Okay. Let me ask this, because I'm always a couple more things I want to get to. I want to get some thoughts on how do we create more jobs and stuff for our young people. Let's talk about jobs and after-school program. I want to throw that on the table, because people can always point out that we need jobs and we need after-school programs. What are some of the things that we can do to make a dent in there? Anybody want
to
pick up
on
that?
We have to create businesses for our people.
Go ahead.
What
do you mean, create businesses?
When I say create businesses, I mean from agriculture, plumbing, electrical. You know, it just depends on you wanted these kids to have just a place to go, you know, to fall back on. You know, if they wanted to be an athlete, they can know how to do plumbing. You know, they can just know how to do electrical, anything, just on their own. Most kids today don't have anything to fall back on.
Any skills. Okay.
Any skills.
Practical
skills, practical education, mm-hmm. and you build on that. And, you know, that creates jobs and employment. But if there's no businesses or nothing there to do, how are you going to have jobs?
Okay, let me ask you this then. Great, I agree with that. And it would be great if we can work that into the programs for our kids who are going to school, et cetera, trying to get a degree. How about those individuals who dropped out of school, ended up in prison, trying to reintegrate back into society? How do you deal with that?
What I say, don't give up on them. I mean, you can take each one of those individuals, talk about them, show them. I mean, it's not that hard to show somebody a skill. You know, say this skill. They may like this skill. They might like this one better, another one. Just show them each individual skills and let them choose which one they want to go into. Just mm-hmm. give them that chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people, 9 out of 10 people are going to take the chance and go in a direction that they want to go into.
Okay.
And this includes the right mentors. And like seniors, retired people, ex-gang members, dancers, teachers, athletes, truck drivers, plumbers, as he expressed. This includes the right people and all ages, you know, giving them a positive school competition and encouragement to complete what they start. Financial support for higher education.
Mm-hmm.
Video games. For science, you know, like chemistry and other things that are fun, but they're learning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I want to get back to, because I'm looking at the huge population that I see that's in danger, the ones that's caught up in the penal system, et cetera, like that. Do we have to do something like, see, can we get some kind of laws in there where when a person catches sinners, the more schooling, like whether if they get a GED, they get time cut off, if they're able to get some kind of training. You think it takes something like that within the penal system?
Yeah.
Well, this is what I'm working on. It's not just in the system, but also the bridge from when they come out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have somebody, you know, there are people that are users, and they're going to use it, but when they come out, they're going to go back into this.
Mm-hmm.
But to give them a reason, you know, a change of consciousness, a worthiness, to dream again, mm-hmm. to vision again, to know that everybody can't be president, but hey, you're an artist, you like to draw, mm-hmm. or you can paint signs, the streets need clean.
Mm-hmm.
So giving them an idea of themselves and know that they're worthy to go forward in the completion, and this includes what he had said, businesses to accept them.
Okay. All right, we're going to come back for that in a minute. What I want to do, because we're going to come back for some closing comments, but I want to do a little quick open mic. I want to have Andrea. She's going to do a piece right quick on us. on Dr. King called We Dream On, and then we're going to come back for our closing comments.
Thank you, Melvin. This is dedicated to Martin Luther King and his dream. Although April 4th, 1968, the shot rang out loud, like a mighty clap of thunder from a steely, gray, ominous cumulus cloud. The screams followed, the cries, the tears. Our worst fears came true. A mad assassin's bullet finally took you as the whole entire world looked on in disbelief and scorn. Seconds, minutes, hours later, you were pronounced dead and gone. One angry, excruciating, collective, painful sigh. Why? Why? What had this articulate, brilliant, God-fearing, Nobel Peace Prize-winning man done to deserve such a horrendous fate? For he was larger than his own life. His mission, destiny had been great. He was chosen to heal the wounds of racism, hatred, and malicious discontent, chosen to recreate this world the way God truly meant. For God meant his world to be full of love, hope, and unspeakable joy for each and every individual, man, woman, girl, and boy. A world full of peace and harmony where all have true self-autonomy. And you need to know we dream on. Because your legacy was handed down from generation to generation. Your legacy brought civility to this hostile, divided nation. Your legacy etched on the hearts of all humankind. And your legacy brought sight to those not literally but figuratively blind. They were blind to the fact that all men were created free to be treated with respect and live equally and not subjected to lynchings, cross burnings, incarceration, aka Jim Crow, but liberated with the ability to simply just come and go and not mandated to assemble at the rear of the bus and not to be told, don't sit here, nigga, you can't sit here because you ain't one of us. And you need to know we dream on. Your legacy born on that dusty Selma, Alabama road as we marched arm in arm, hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder, heads held high, the seeds of democracy were quietly sowed as you marched. Arm in arm, hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder, heads held high into a hornet's nest, a venomous snake pit of Ku Klux Klan mentality. Still, you marched arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, heads held high, protesting nonviolently the vicious dogs, hot lead bullets, bludgeoning batons, nor pressurized firemen's water hose could quench this thirst for freedom, justice, equality, dignity, democracy. And so your story goes. And that legacy, your legacy just grows and grows and grows. And you need to know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that the first black president, President Obama, his mantra was, yes, we can. The votes populi, the voice of the people spoke, yes, we did. Yes, we still, and yes, we will continue to overcome and dream on. Thank you.
Okay, we need to wind down. I want to get some closing comments, but Dr. Ruby, can you quickly give us your contact information for those that want to get in contact with you?
It's freedomlight@agapelive.com.
Okay.
And I would like to say peace, power.
Okay. Thank you. We're winding down. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. Please listen to the past shows on iTunes, Facebook, skidrow.la. And once again, closing out, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving created spirit be upon you and on your family. Stephen Fish playing a song about Dr. King. God, that's it.